is Nicola Crowther. So for those of you who don't know me, my name is Nicola Crowther, and I am a mediator practicing in family mediation, civil and commercial mediation, and workplace mediation. I have a mediation practice in the north of England. It's the largest independent practice in the north, and also a practice in the UAE in Dubai. I have been a mediator for 14 years now, following a career in family law for about 12 years before that. And I also train and teach mediators, civil and commercial mediators, and family mediators, and I do that all over the world. So I like to think I might know a little bit about mediation and how it all works. And the purpose of today's webinar really is just a chance for me to share some of that with you, particularly in relation to civil and commercial mediations. And the reason for this is because quite recently I had the pleasure of doing a civil commercial mediation involving a probate dispute. And although there wasn't a great deal of value to the claim, it was nonetheless very hotly contested. And I'm sure that some of you will appreciate that quite often the ones that don't have an awful lot of value are the ones that are most most hotly contested. So it was a particularly difficult day, and of course, because it was a probate dispute, it was families, and therefore quite emotive issues to be addressed. And so we spent a great deal of time wading through it. And the solicitors involved in that case, I knew one of them really quite well. She sends me a bit of her work, which is great, regularly. And the other one I had never met before. And at the conclusion of the day, at about 5:30-ish, we'd managed to settle this dispute. And all the clients were most pleased, and saying how great the whole process had been, delighted to have finally brought it to a resolution after 18 months, etc., etc. And the solicitor who I'd never worked with jumped in and said, "Oh yes, this has been marvellous. I've actually never done a mediation before, despite 20 years in practice." And of course, that surprised me a little bit. But she said that it had been absolutely brilliant, delighted we've achieved this, lovely. So all in all, a good day's work for yours truly, or so you would think. But 45 minutes later, the whole thing had gone terribly south, and within a week, I learned that the matter had proceeded to court. So this led me to think, what went wrong? Why was it so great, so good, and then it dropped off a cliff edge? And I think it's because in reality, there was a lack of understanding about what was expected from the solicitor in the mediation process, and I'll come on to that more in a little bit. So I want to share my screen with you now. We'll go through some of the things that I want to address today that will help you to help your clients to get the best out of the mediation process. Let's see. So just wait for that to share. Marvelous. Okay. So really today, what we're looking at now, this is going to involve me doing something technical, which will blow my tiny mind. Bear with. There we go. Okay, so the important questions. How can you, as a solicitor, prepare? How do you prepare your client for mediation? What's expected of you, as the solicitor in this process? What are the timescales for mediation? What are the costs? And then what happens at the end of the mediation process? So let's start, first of all, by looking at how you can prepare. Now, as a mediator, I've always been a firm believer that mediation is not a substitute for legal advice. And although I am legally trained, not every mediator is, and you shouldn't expect them to be. Your role is to provide the legal advice. And so we say that you should prepare this and you should put together a trial bundle as if you were going to court. So everything that you think you might want to rely on to assert your case in court, put it into a trial bundle, have it ready and to hand on the day. Provide the mediator with a position statement, including any recent offers to settle. Now, the reason we're asking for that is because what I want is a concise version of the current events, an overview of what's really happening. Because you can see at my next bullet point, I'm saying, don't expect the mediator to have read the whole trial bundle. We will not have done. If you send me 5 LeverArch files, I'm not going to read them all. Now, you might think, well, that's just utterly bonkers. You would expect me to read it all. But the reality is that really, as a mediator, I can guarantee that in nearly every case I've ever done, I will always extract something from the clients that you would never find anywhere in any trial bundle or position statement at all. And really what I mean by that is I will find some sort of emotive linchpin that wouldn't be mentioned in any case law or legal maxims. It is something that really is the very essence of this that will allow it to move forward if it's properly addressed. In the case that I've started off referring to today, in that particular case, one client was most upset that the other client had been at her house for Christmas dinner and she'd welcomed him into her home. And yet only the week before he'd been to get some legal advice from a solicitor about how he was going to sue her. And she thought, you know, at the time she'd let him in for Christmas dinner, she didn't know that, and then later discovered it and felt this was all completely devious and dishonest. That was the thing that hurt her the most. And if we can address that bit, then it frees up everything else and suddenly we're into a problem-solving mode and we're able to start talking about how we move the conflict forward. So for a mediator perspective, I am not a judge, so I am not here to start saying who's in the right and who's in the wrong. So I won't have read absolutely everything you send me. I'm also not your barrister for the day. I'm not counsel. I'm not going to be putting anybody's argument forward. So if one party says to me in their room, in their caucus, oh, this and this has happened, I am not going to immediately refute that and say, ah, well, in trial bundle 4, page 3036, there is this document that says it didn't happen, because it's not for me to argue the case. I will take that back to the other party in their room and say, they're saying that you didn't do X, Y, and Z, at which point you will refer to trial bundle 4, page 3036, and say, ah, no, we didn't, here it is. So you have to have your case prepared. You have to be prepared to argue it yourself, albeit you're doing that through a third party, and I'm gaining an overview all the time. So as a mediator, my role is not in the law. My role is in the conflict, it's in the dispute, and trying to find ways to move people into problem-solving mode and ways to move people forward out of that conflict and find a resolution. I will not pretend to know all of the law. Like I say, I am legally trained, but that doesn't mean that every mediator is. So don't expect us to have all of the answers. It's your case, you know it, and that's what you're there for. And that's why you're there to help your client with that. However, that's not to say that just because I'm not going to read a 5 sort of bundle page trial bundle doesn't mean to say that you shouldn't prepare properly for it, as if it were going to trial, for several reasons. First of all, because if you prepare for trial and then mediation doesn't work, you've already at least done most of the work for this. Second of all, by preparing for trial in this way and each of you, each party sharing this bundle or having an agreed trial bundle, you get to have a look at what the other side would be saying if this were in court. You get a sneak peek at what the opposition case might look like. And there's lots of mediations I've done where people have mediated specifically for that reason, just to be able to try out their theories before actually deciding whether or not you want to be able to take this to court. So you might as well put everything in. And also, you know, in preparing like this, it means that you charge appropriately for your time and you should be prepared. There's nothing worse than coming to a mediation and saying, oh, well, actually, maybe there was a piece of evidence that could have really helped right now, but don't have it to hand and it isn't here. Because we're in mediation, we're here for one day or one half day. There isn't scope to be coming back later next week and providing it then. You know, you have to think about this as being a little bit like a court process in that respect, that you don't get a second bite at this. You know, you wouldn't be able to say to the judge, oh, I don't have that with me today, I'll provide it next week. So it's important that you come completely prepared, and your client would expect you to be prepared as well. So speaking of the clients then, how best can we prepare our clients for this? And of course, first of all, straight off the bat, I say, well, by managing their expectations. But everybody on this call will know that that is the curse of any solicitor. Trying to manage client expectations is always really difficult, usually because there's somebody outside of the process telling them they could have the moon on a stick. And it is your job to say, well, maybe you might not. And there might be the odd hole in your case. But in order to prepare your client fully then for mediation, you have to inform them about the process and what it will look like on the day. So inform them that we won't necessarily arrive at the same time. You wouldn't be expected to be in the same waiting room as each other. You'll be in different rooms throughout the process. So it might be that you would never need to come into contact with the person who you're up against. For lots of clients, that's really reassuring. It's quite gets clients quite anxious thinking that they're going to have to come into contact with somebody who they're in conflict with. And so quite unlike a court process, might never even have to see each other. So this really appeals to lots of clients. Now, at the beginning of the day, we'll sometimes start with an opening statement where, as the mediator, I will set out what the day will look like, my role, and how I will move between rooms and share information between you on a confidential basis so that clients understand that they can share things with the mediator, tell me absolutely everything, and whatever I am told is completely confidential and I cannot share it in the other room without express permission. So in doing it that way, it allows me as the mediator to be what I call the keeper of the secrets. Because I know everything that everyone in this room is thinking, and I know everything that everyone in this room is thinking. Things they have never revealed to each other. Nobody ever reveals their bottom line to each other in solicitors' letters. They might say it's their bottom line, but it's not really. And they don't reveal their deepest fears, their biggest concerns about all of this. That's stuff they will share with me. Again, probably something that doesn't even really relate legally to the matter at hand. It might be that somebody says, if we don't settle this, I can't afford a family holiday to Florida that I've just promised my wife and kids. I'm really worried about that. You know, I know that that's their probably one of their key goals is to get this settled because they've got that extra level of pressure breathing down their neck. So my job is to try and work out where everybody stands. And I have this beautiful helicopter overview of the whole case. And I think, you know, they could settle this because they've said they would maybe move to there. They've said they would maybe move to there. They've never communicated that to each other. And my job is to get them to agree to start communicating that. So in the beginning part of the day, there's a lot of information gathering for me as the mediator to do, asking lots of questions that, like I say, won't necessarily be contained in all of the information we've been provided already from you. My job is to try and extract that information from the client. So they need to know that I'm going backwards and forwards. So I'll explain all of that at the beginning of the day and what's expected of them. But I have to say that, you know, the clients need to be aware that we don't have to start the day in the same room if they don't want to. Quite a lot of the time, lots of solicitors will say, we'll dispense with opening statements. At the start of a mediation process, every solicitor and client is entitled to make an opening statement with everybody in the same room, and then we split off into separate rooms, and so the process begins. It depends on the case. Sometimes doing that can be quite inflammatory, and clients find it very difficult to hear things said about them that they don't necessarily agree with, and they want to shout across and have their own say. And it's difficult as a mediator for me to manage that. And I'm not always convinced that we should start the day by increasing the conflict and making my job even harder to do. So sometimes we will dispense with opening statements, and sometimes clients are just separate rooms and my job is to act as a go-between. Clients can bring someone with them for support beyond yourselves if they want to, but that has to be agreed in advance. So sometimes someone might say they want a family member with them or some other source of support. And if that can be agreed in advance, then that can happen. Again, that's something that wouldn't necessarily happen in a courtroom. The other thing is that we say someone for support, and I say family member, but sometimes it might be a financial advisor, an accountant, a mortgage advisor, somebody who will help them to make decisions on the day. And if that person is part of that decision-making process, then there's a reasonably good argument that they should be involved in this. However, we must all be clear that it is all subject to confidentiality, and everybody who is involved will have to sign the agreement to mediate document that neatly sets out the rules of confidentiality, so that we're all bound by that. And the final bullet point there says that we should prepare them for the inevitability of compromise. And I say, please don't set hard and fast bottom lines. Clients always come in with very clear parameters about what they can expect from this and where they will and won't go to. My job is to push them past that bottom line more often than not. And so if they come in with really hard and fast bottom lines and you haven't prepared them for the inevitability of compromise, it makes my job a lot harder. So realistic bottom lines, realistic parameters, but in all your heads, be ready for movement on that. When faced with the alternative of a court process, it's amazing how many people suddenly go to places they didn't think they would go to past that bottom line with a view to trying to find a settlement. So we talked about how you're going to prepare for this and how you're going to prepare your client. So then what happens when you arrive on the day as the solicitor? You've got all these trial bundles, your client's ready, you're ready, you know what you're expecting, or do you? What do you then do on the day? What is your role? First bullet point is a lot of sitting around. And this is the biggest thing that as mediators we hear all the time from solicitors and counsel that, oh, mediation is just a day of sitting around, hand-holding with clients. There is not enough small talk in the world to cover this situation, I can promise you. So I always make it a big deal of making sure that, particularly if we're in full day sessions, that there is plenty of newspapers on hand. I will tell people to bring a book. You might tell your clients to bring a book, making sure people go out and get fresh air, take a walk, that kind of thing. But more importantly, at the very beginning of the day, in my opening statement, I give everybody verbal permission to completely ignore each other. Don't feel that you have to sit there for the whole day being a fountain of legal knowledge, continuously spouting the law at your client when I'm not there with you. You will exhaust yourself, and the client must have reasonable expectations that's not what's going to happen today. And that actually, in between, when I'm not in the room, I might leave you with something to think about and something to discuss for 5, 10 minutes, but ultimately, you're going to have at least 20 minutes of dead air time. So feel free to get a cup of tea, get a coffee. There is always tea and coffee and refreshments on the go, and read the paper. When in your practice in life has anyone ever said to you that you should have a cup of tea and read the paper while you're on the meter? I bet that's never happened. Welcome to mediation. You've done all your hard work, you've prepared all of this. Your job today is to just sit around providing a source of support, except for that moment where you are going to need to provide some robust and decisive legal advice. Now, there will undoubtedly come a crunch point in the day where we have got this as far as we can, we've pushed right up to their bottom line, and we're in a world where your client will look at you and say, should I accept that offer? Or is there any merit in me proceeding to court? What's my risks here? And that's what you're being paid for. That 10 minutes there is worth every penny of your fee for that day. That 10 minutes where you say, you know what? I probably would try and settle it, maybe push for this, but it's a risk going to court when there is this offer on the table. So at some point, you are going to be the person holding the baby and you are going to be looked at to be able to make a decision. But not for the whole day, just for that little bit at the end. The other thing is that what is expected of the solicitor, let's be really clear about this process, really clear and upfront right now. Ensure the decision makers are in the room. So when we talk about preparing yourself, preparing your client, and what's expected of you, is to make sure that everybody and everything that could possibly be needed to make a decision on the day is there in the room. You've got all your evidence, that's all there. You've maybe brought along the company accountant or the IFA. They're there to help make decisions because they're holding the purse strings, perhaps. And do you have the right client in the room? You know, who is the decision maker in this company? Is it the CEO? Who is the decision maker? Is it all the family members, or is it just one family member? Who needs to be there to make a judgment call on this? Because if that person's not there, then is this an abortive mediation process? If we can't make decisions on the day, then what are we all doing? So it's really important that you've got that person there and make sure you've got the authority. Okay, so we talk about mediation costs, not mediation costs, your costs. And this is a common mistake, shall we say, that I see regularly from our solicitors. When we talk about costs, we talk about your costs of the case to date, and that includes your attendance at the mediation. So if it's been a 4-hour session, an 8-hour session, however many hours, make sure that is factored into your costs. If there's costs for an expert who's had to attend on the day, the accountant, whatever, make sure that's factored into your costs. So know your costs to date. Know your costs of going to trial. So if this is going to cost, you know, to go all the way through to a trial because mediation is going to fail, be prepared to say to your client, it's going to cost you another £30,000, it's going to cost you another £60,000 on top of what you've already paid so far. I always say that you should tell your clients in advance what the costs look like. I have been involved in some very awkward conversations when clients are suddenly made aware of actually what they have spent so far and what they're looking down the barrel of if they don't settle this in court. Quite often, alarmingly, clients don't actually add it all up. They just keep paying the invoices as they roll in. And it's not until it's spelled out to them and given them as one solid cost that they go, I didn't realize I'd spent that much. Good grief, I didn't realize I was that far in. And also it's going to cost me that much more to go to court. You're better preparing them with that maybe a day or two before the mediation happens so that you don't have to have that awkward conversation face to face with your client. And the reason I'm so fastidious about costs and saying make sure you know your costs, know what it is because as a mediator, I can't tell you how often we have settled something and everybody's happy and that's great. And then one party says, yep, marvelous. Okay, we want to claim our costs as well. You think, oh, we've settled it. And now you want me to go in there and ask for another £15,000 because that's your cost to date. Oh, right, okay, fine. So I go back into the other room and I say, oh, you know, because, you know, X, Y, and Z, can they have a claim for costs? And the other side say, well, okay, yeah, fine. We'll pay their costs as well. And you think, good grief, live to fight another day. I've managed to get that online. So you come back and say, yes, they'll pay your costs, £15,000. And then there's our costs for today as well. And the cost of this expert attending, so that's going to be another 4,000. Could you just go and you think, oh no, every 2 minutes you're moving the goalpost just a little bit more, just a little bit more. All of this undermines the entire process and all the hard work we've done to this point. Because in the other room, they've completely lost faith because the goalposts are being moved all the time. And they will eventually go, that's it, forget it. Not only are we not paying their costs, but the whole deal's off the table. They're just messing everyone around. They've got no intention of settling this. They're not acting in good faith. And you watch the whole thing disintegrate in your hands. And as a mediator, you've then got to spend an extra couple of hours trying to pull the whole thing back on track. And I can't tell you how often I've been sat there till late in the night thinking, we had this at 4 o'clock this afternoon, and it came off the rails over a costs issue. And I've spent the last however many hours trying to get it back on track simply because the costs haven't been clear. If you're going to say you want to claim for costs, make it really clear early on in the day and be very clear about what those costs are and make sure your client knows what the costs are as well. Yeah. In terms of costs for mediation, just as an aside issue, the general rule of thumb is always that each client bears their own cost. So there is a fee for the mediator for the day or the half day or whatever, and that is to be shared equally. Now, as mediators, we nearly always insist on that, simply because there is an imbalance otherwise. And what we're trying to do in mediation is create this level playing field. And if it is that one person has paid for the day or for the mediator's time, and the other person hasn't put anything in, they have less of an incentive to try and resolve this because they haven't got any skin in the game, as it were. So it might be that they will say, yeah, you know what, I'm going to be really tough. Yeah, you know what, I might just look out the window for a bit. I might just drag this out. I might just really stick to my guns, like, because it's not cost me anything to be here for today. So really, what is my incentive to try and settle this? If they have both paid for it, they have both invested in the process, and generally means that they are then coming to the process with an intention to try and settle, which is what we really want. So, you know, even though there might be a financial imbalance somewhere, we would usually say that everybody should pay their own costs for mediation, their own legal fees up to that point. And it might be that you then have an argument about who pays for the costs of the day later on. But there and then, when they're trying to make those decisions, everybody has put something in the pot. It makes my job easier because they're more likely to see the merit of this and settle. Okay. So we talk about time scales. So the length of the mediation session is usually agreed in advance. So as I say, we'll either know whether this is going to be a half day or a full day or 2 hours. And everybody pays for that time in advance. However, with that said, there always has to be a degree of flexibility, and everybody has to come to the table on the understanding that there is scope for this to continue beyond the allotted time. And as a mediator, we will invoice for the extra time. You mustn't think that we have said this will finish at 5 o'clock and they've only paid for up until 5 o'clock, because if we are getting somewhere at 4:30, believe you and me, I am never going to pull the shutters down and say, oh, you were so close. Anyway, good luck going to court. We wouldn't. I will keep working at this until we are absolutely satisfied it can't be resolved, or until it is resolved. And you can usually guarantee that your clients at that point are just as eager. They can see how close they're getting and that there's movement. They will want to stay. So if I'm staying and your clients are staying, guess what? You're staying as well. So be prepared that this might rumble on beyond the time scale that has been set. So make plans to rearrange your evening, arrange school pickups, whatever you need to do to make it clear that you might not be home at the time you said you were going to be home. And it's important that we do that. And I think that it's important from a client perspective, because again, any of you who've ever done a mediation will know that, you know, you start off in the morning and it just goes so slowly. And usually by 1, 2 in the afternoon, you think, it's never going to go anywhere. Everybody waits until there's about half an hour left of the allotted time to suddenly start going, okay, well, I will move. Okay, well, I will do that then. Go on, I will put a little bit more in the pot. And you think, good grief, if you started like this at 10 o'clock this morning, we could have been done by lunchtime. But there's something about having that deadline on it. There's something about that knowing that we've only got an hour left and that I'm definitely going down a court route that focuses the mind, galvanizes people into action. So it is important to set a bit of a deadline, but for us to know as professionals, we can go beyond that time if need be. And that is set quite clearly in our agreement to mediate that we can go over the time. And if we do, there'll be an extra charge. If they think they're getting somewhere and they want to keep going, then we owe it to them to keep going. Now you'll see my next bullet point I have. Don't worry, lunch and dinner are provided. No one makes good decisions on an empty stomach. And it's true. It is really true. And I have watched that unfold with my own eyes, you know, that people who get hungry end up getting hangry. And you will find that, you know, people who aren't fed and watered suddenly have an inability to process, have an inability to think. And the last thing that I would want as a mediator, or you as legal professionals would want, is for clients to make decisions that they then later regret. Decisions that were made because they were exhausted or hungry or tired, and they were just thinking, what's the quickest way to get out of this room? We need people to still have their best thinking heads on, even if we are working until late in the evening, which I have done. We need those people to be able to make decisions that they are not going to regret, decisions that are well thought out, for reasons that I will come on to later. So, yes, again, as a solicitor, if you've done all your prep work in advance, you get to come to a mediation session where you get your lunch and you get to sit down and read the newspapers and frankly have quite a nice day out. You've got to do a little bit of work at the end, but by and large, you've front-loaded this. You've done all your work up front. And if you've prepared it properly, you've helped me to do my best job, you've done your best job, we should get a settlement for the client. I also put as a side note in there that we should also be aware of the time scales for court processes in your local area, so that clients can be made aware of the alternative. Now, we talked a moment ago about the alternative costs of resolving this through a court process. You know, how much is it going to cost me to get all the way through trial? Just as important a question is how long is it going to take to get all the way through trial on this? And sometimes people will think, well, maybe it's worth budging a little bit on the finances if I'm going to get this resolved now, as opposed to resolved in 12 months from now. So again, be aware of what your timescales look like in your court, in your local area, so that you can advise your client when they're trying to weigh up the pros and cons of resolving now versus going to court. I don't know how many of you are aware or how many of you have had dealings with the court service, what's it called, Her Majesty's Small Claims Mediation Service. They've got a catchy acronym for it that doesn't trip off the tongue. But yes, the Small Claims Mediation Service, for cases under 10,000, and they're looking to roll it out now for fast track, anything up to 25,000. But the premise of that is that it is a mediation done by telephone. So it's not even a Zoom, it's not even a virtual or face-to-face, done by telephone for an hour. I don't know what wand mediators are going to wave in that hour, but if matters are not settled within the hour, then it can proceed, the case can proceed to a judge. But it might be worth, you know, just making sure that you're aware of being able to inform your clients of these sort of things. But, you know, if that hour, it looks like it's nearly going to settle something, the mediator has the power to say, we'll go for another hour, we'll go for another hour, and roll it on. So it might work if it looks like they're going to settle, and then if the clients are interested in staying on the call and keeping going. But ultimately, it just means that everybody is being asked to mediate now before being able to have their cases heard. And the courts are also looking at saying that anything beyond a value of 25,000 should also mediate, but you can pick your own independent mediator rather than using the court service one. So again, with likely timescales, the court service think they can do it in an hour. I'll be amazed, but we'll see. How does mediation conclude then? So again, this is where you as the solicitor are about to earn your fee. So you have to be prepared to draft a heads of agreement or a new contract or an amendment to a will, whatever the dispute has been about. The idea of mediation is that when a settlement is reached, when it is agreed at that moment, your job as the legal professionals involved is to draft up a binding document that cannot then be unpicked the next day, which is why I say earlier on that it's really important that clients make good, solid decisions, not when they're hungry and exhausted, because there isn't necessarily the opportunity for them to wriggle out of it later down the line this is going to be binding. A new contract is drawn as of now, and everybody's going to sign it as of now, which is why you need to be ready with your best legal advice, and you need to be ready to draft something or to approve something, and everybody goes home with the job done. In the event that mediation is unsuccessful, you need to be ready to tell your clients what the next steps are, timescales, costs, and when they should next come into your office to start the ball rolling on that, to prepare the paperwork, et cetera, et cetera, so that clients don't come away from the mediation session feeling completely despondent, and perhaps not feeling that the whole thing has been a waste of time either. You might be able to say it's been a worthwhile exercise today because we've at least seen what we're up against. We've seen where they are prepared to go to. And don't get me wrong, there are cases that settle after mediation has finished. You know, once people have slept on it, they might submit a further offer a little bit further than they were prepared to go to previously. So sometimes they do settle outside of mediation after the event. But those that settle at mediation, you should be prepared to draft your documentation there and then. So at the beginning of this session today, we spoke about that case I had that went a little bit awry, and I couldn't work out initially, well, how has it gone so wrong? Well, I did know where it got so wrong. And like I say, I think it is because the solicitor involved had never actually mediated before and didn't know what to expect. And it was sort of a how not to mediate. And I'm going to use this in all my civil commercial mediation training from now on. But essentially, this solicitor was representing siblings. And on the day, only one sibling turned up. So spot our first fail here. Not all of the decision makers were in the room. So this was raised by the other party, had already been raised by me. Where is everybody? And I had received much reassurance that the solicitor had authority to make decisions on behalf of her clients, even though they weren't present. I was also reassured that they were all on the end of a phone, and if we needed to speak to them, we can do, and we can get their instructions over the phone. Okay, on that basis, we decided to proceed. Now, we would have been within our rights, myself and the other team, either of us could have said it, to say the mediation is abortive. It can't go ahead because not all of the decision makers are there. We might have all the information to make decisions, the actual decision makers themselves aren't here, and therefore are we wasting our time? However, you know, stopping the mediation at that point, parties have already paid their fees, they wouldn't have been refundable, so we took the view that we might as well plow ahead and see if we can make some progress on the basis that had been suggested, that they're all on the end of a phone and got authority to make decisions in any event. Let's see if we can proceed on that basis. It's better than wasting the costs of the day and everybody going home and rearranging. So we did, we proceeded. And as I say, during the course of the day, there was that emotive moment where she was very upset about a Christmas dinner, and the whole thing got moved, and actually power of apology, that sort of thing. Eventually they came to a settlement plan that they were mostly happy with, or they could at least live with, which is the level of a mediator. Can you live with it? And so you would seemingly think this had gone well, until the solicitor says, well, we can't actually sign this heads of agreement now. I can't sign this document that's been drafted by the other party because I don't have all of my clients' instructions. They're not all here. I said, yes, but you told me you had authority to get your clients' instructions. Yeah, but there's one of them that we just can't get hold of on the phone. So yeah, we'll just deal with it next week. And I said, no, this is our next fail in this. You have to agree this now. That was the whole premise of mediation, is that once you reach an agreement, it's heads of agreement drafted, everybody signs it, there's no wiggle room to go back. So I, in this case, said, well, maybe we could negotiate with this side, buy you some time to think about it and give you a tight deadline to respond. Well, yes. Then comes the next issue. She says, I mean, I can't advise my client whether or not she should accept this anyway, because the client was saying, yeah, I'm happy, let's just go. Yeah, my siblings will be totally fine with this. I'll sign whatever you need me to sign. And I said, let's just go ahead on that basis then. Lovely. And she said, oh, no, I can't advise my client to settle this. I don't know if this is a good deal or not because it's not my case. It's somebody else's case in the office, and the office is now closed, so I can't speak to them. So I have no authority to even advise my client or settle this. I know nothing about the case. Begs the question, what really was the point of her sitting there having a lovely day? She then it went off, and they had a tight deadline for the next week to respond and accept the heads of agreement, everybody sign it, which she failed to meet. But she did, I did see an email float by that said, also, I couldn't possibly be asked to make decisions under such pressure because it was 6 o'clock at night and the mediation had finished. Again, she should have been aware that at 6 o'clock at night, that's nothing. The mediation could keep going, has to keep going. Everybody else was prepared to keep going, just that she had to get away. She was busy. She had plans, and so she couldn't possibly stay any longer. So the whole thing became completely abortive. And it is such a shame because the clients worked really hard to go beyond their boundaries of what they were, their bottom lines. They'd aired an awful lot of stuff. They both felt so much better that they had resolved this. The relief was huge. It was a job well done as far as I was concerned. We'd done it. Then the whole thing disintegrated because one of the solicitors involved didn't fully understand what would be expected of her and what would be the process. And that immediately engendered a load of bad will, and the other side felt that they hadn't acted in good faith at all. The conflict shot through the roof again. The whole thing has sadly ended up in a court process. And that led me to think how many solicitors are out there who maybe haven't used mediation before and wouldn't know what to expect and could find themselves in this very position. And if I could possibly help to avoid that and let people know that this is what mediation really involves, and this is what you need to do, and this is what your role is, then maybe you could use mediation a bit more, and maybe you would get much better results for your clients. Now I'm conscious of time, and I said that I would do 45 minutes and leave 15 minutes for questions. And I know everybody's on their lunch break and the like, and I don't want to eat too much into that time. But I'm absolutely happy to answer any questions anybody might have about the mediation process. And even if you don't want to unmute yourself and ask a question now, by all means, feel free to contact me by email, and give me a nudge anytime. I'm happy to answer any questions you've got. But is there anybody who would like to ask a question now about the mediation process? Nope. All super quiet, which again means another job well done for yours truly. I'm assuming you now all now know exactly how mediation works and exactly what is expected of you, and I look forward to mediating with you all at some point. But as I say, if you have any questions at any time, please do get in touch. And if anybody thinks they would like a recording of this, then let me know and I can send that along. I think a copy of this should be appearing on our website in the not too distant future. Okay. Okay. Thank you very much, folks. Take care.
Thank you.